Hey, you heard of Urban Float? Well, if you like to relax and disconnect, then you should check out Urban Float in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, located next to Rosenfeld's Jewish Deli and the new Ocean Atlantic Shopping Center on Route 1 North. Guests of Urban Float get to relax and float in their own flotation pod filled with purified skin temperature water and 1,200 pounds of dissolved Epsom salts. The health benefits are profound. I love it. You can book your first float at urbanfloat.com. Just be sure to select the Rehoboth Beach location and use the code FIRSTTIME at checkout to receive 50% off your first float. Renew, refresh, revive at Urban Float. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Doing well.
It is afternoon, right? Yeah. I think that out of podcasting, the hardest part is remembering if it's morning or afternoon.
Well, we're right in the middle.
We're 1 minute into it. So it's good morning. So, Ethan, why don't you introduce yourself so I don't screw anything up, because it's a pretty good title.
Sure. My name is Ethan Holland, and I'm the digital director at Draper Media.
And that is amazing, because now it's official. Now I'm nervous. Well, honestly, you know, and you, I guess Carlos had asked you to come on. Me and Carlos kind of do this together. We're partners a little bit in this. I call him corporate. He's a little bit of the collared guy, the corporate guy. And the problem is it sometimes gets a little lost when the three of us get going. So I didn't want you to feel tricked. We didn't trick you over here. It's just, I think it's a little more fun when it's just the two of us. So what's going on?
Not much. I've been listening to your podcast, and I very much like your interviewing style. I think you're a very good conversationalist. I wish I was able to do the same.
Well, we're going to find out. I bet you are. I got the experience from being a hairdresser. You know, every client is a podcast for the most part, you know, and you have to, you know, learn how to carry a conversation, find interest in it, and not suffer from compassion exhaustion, which sometimes happens in the hair business, because it seems like a lot of more negative stories or more sad or more dumping kind of stories come out. So you have to, you know, and it's fine, but sometimes it can be after a long day, you get a little tired of it. But I'm excited because you are involved with media. Digital media, this.
Correct.
This stuff, right?
Yes.
So do you have any experience with podcasting? Do you guys have podcasting that goes on through WBOC?
No, we do not have what I would call a literal approach, like a podcast. We have several radio stations, so we have all of the equipment.
Right.
And we certainly do digital exclusives sometimes that are kind of could be considered a podcast, but there's no franchise or regular scheduled thing. For the most part, I'm a consumer, like a lot of folks, we're listening to podcasts.
Right. Well, do you, and even though I do podcasting, I don't really listen to podcasts, if that sounds a little silly.
It does.
I love Joe Rogan's podcast, and what I love about Joe Rogan's podcast is just a free flow conversation. You pick and choose if you are interested. I pick and choose if I'm interested. I like his topics. It's usually about stuff that nobody seems to be interested in, like quantum mechanics is one of my favorite topics, and for some reason it makes no sense to me. It's like black coffee, you know, trying to figure out how to love something that tastes so terrible, but loving it. It's like quantum mechanics. I'm just so interested in it. It makes no sense. But I just want to listen to it. And that's the kind of stuff he has. And I like his style of conversation. And to me, his podcast makes me feel like anybody could do a podcast. And I was like, well, I think I could do one. So that's how I kind of got into it. But it's always but I'm finding that there's like a podcast like that. And then you have like a podcast where maybe more, you know, it's basically been put out already and then reformatted into a podcast form and then put onto a podcast channel. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I listen to the same, I think based on what I've heard of you interviewing other folks, I listen to a lot of the same podcasts, and I do like the String Theory episode of Joe Rogan and the Neil deGrasse Tyson type stuff. But then there's also things like Serial, or they're almost like plot-driven podcasts, or The Daily, which is not conversational, in the New York Times or The Journal. Wall Street Journal has a new one called The Journal. That's a good news podcast as well.
So do you guys also do radio?
We do.
Okay, because I had you on. Well, we had you. Carlos had you on, but when I found out, I was excited because I don't really know. I know clearly what I see, WBOC, but I don't really know a lot. So I was excited because this is one of those podcasts that I get to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I was excited to hear what all kind of, what we can talk about. I don't, not like top secret, but you know, what you want to share. But I was excited to learn about that stuff. So what radio?
We have several radio stations. We purchased the Midshore Audio Group, or not Midshore Audio Group, sorry. That's right. We have Chesapeake Country. We have a classic country radio station. We have WBOC 102.5. We've got The Duck.
Oh,
and we
okay.
have AM Sports Radio as well. So it's a pretty pretty extensive lineup of radio. Mostly traditional, but one thing that's a great call out is it's local DJs.
Right.
So all the talent is in studio, and you know they're from this area, and we talk about things that are local, and we have a talk show in the morning on WBOC 102.5. That's probably the most well known with Corey and Sarah in the mornings.
Okay. Nice. Well, and it's funny, you know, and you would know this. It's always changing, right? It's changing quick. Everything seems to be. You know, radio, we've been dealing or using radio for at least 50 years because that's how long I've been alive, and it's been radio, probably longer than that. But there's always something new, and it's like, you know, even starting a podcast, you know, we want to try to put it out to people. I mean, there must be 1,000 avenues to put a podcast or a picture of a podcast or promoting a podcast. In fact, I was just having a conversation this morning about more places to put podcasts, and I'm like, I don't... Can't put them on everything, right? It's exhausting. I mean, it would just drive you crazy, and the picking and choosing. It's got to be, and I'm not exactly, maybe you can share a little bit about what is it that you're doing as the director of media,
yeah.
digital media at WBOC. Do you deal with that, figuring out where to put this, all the great stuff that you guys are putting out?
Definitely. I think to give you some background of what I consider a trajectory of my career where it's been a similar story for 20 years now, my first job was at a catalog company that was a print catalog.
Okay.
And so whenever you have a legacy business like print, you have a means of the workflow of how you publish and how you syndicate it and how you get it out. So the same question you're asking now about podcasts, you would say about print.
Right.
So how many people can I mail this to? Who should I mail it to? And the print world, if you're our age, you know, you get the J. Crew catalog, the L.L. Bean catalog, whatever it is.
Sears.
You know, you touch it and you receive it in the mail. And I think that the internet was seen as a competitor to the catalog. You know, so the catalog traditionalists would say, well, you know, this the internet's just not the same as a catalog. You can't touch it. You can't feel it, you know, the pictures or whatever. It's just not as intimate.
Right.
And over the time that I was with the catalog company, the catalog and the internet became friends. And so rather than looking at it as a competitor, it was an extension. So whereas a catalog has a fixed amount of pages, the internet is infinite. So you could have 20 pictures as opposed to one. You could only have one in the print catalog. You could have 20 pictures. You could have extended descriptions. You could get product reviews, how-tos.
Right.
And so the catalog company evolved into the internet, and they worked together. My second job was at a home shopping network, very similar. So you're thinking of...
was it HSN?
No. Home shopping network? This was at Jewelry Television, which is an incredibly large company, and they're one of the...
Is that the one where they sit there and they sell just like loose stones?
Yeah. In fact, that's...
With the tweezers, I'm like, I want some of those tweezers.
It's crazy. They are the largest... I mean, I haven't worked there in a while, so I should be... I'm disclosing I don't work there now.
Right.
But they are, I think, the largest seller of loose stones.
Yeah.
So Jewelry Television, while you think of them as home shopping, same idea. They evolved from this concept of, well, you need to have a host. You need to have scarcity. The whole idea of the home shopping model... It turns out the internet was really good because you could segment. So, you know, you have a high-end gem buyer. That's a pretty sophisticated buyer. You've got a hobbyist, perhaps, that's a different type of buyer. And the internet allowed the company to speak to them individually in different ways, and they integrated with the TV show.
Yeah.
So the first, you know, my first job at the catalog company was catalog versus internet. Then they came together, and then it's... you know, home shopping, TV versus internet, then they came together.
And I would even think, because prior to that, I don't know where you would really go and find loose stones. I mean, was there a loose stone catalog at one time? Or that almost seems like an industry that was kind of figuring out something new to even, before even catalogs. I mean, this was like, who maybe would be interested in loose stones? I found myself watching the show. I don't know. I didn't buy anything, but I'm like, look at all these fascinating stones.
Well, they're good too. Yeah. I think that's what's crazy is you can get a $20,000 stone.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just cubic zirconium. These are really good tanzanite or rubies or emeralds.
Absolutely. I was amazed.
And then I think, you know, my next job was at a mall retailer, so American Eagle Outfitters. Same idea.
Nice.
And across the board with mall retailers, you always have your same day sales in a store. And so you always want to beat your store sales. And if all of a sudden people are using the internet to buy their clothes, they're hurting the same store sales. Or if they return their clothes in the store, you've just deducted that sale from the internet.
Right.
So this idea of the internet being an extension of the store took a while. And now, of course, it's all one store. So when you go to any, you know, jcrew.com, it's J. Crew. It's not the website versus the store versus the catalog. It's just J. Crew.
All pulls from the same inventory, I guess.
All the same inventory, and also from a user perspective, if you're a customer, you don't want to have a different price at one place and a different rule about the other place. It's a hassle. You don't want your org chart to show through to the customer. You just want it to be the company.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
And so that's a good way to kind of bring it into what I do in my current job, which is a traditional broadcaster where you have a model of workflow and production for local news. And now you have the internet, which same exact analogies would apply, where TV has a limited amount of minutes, a show, you know, you have the 6 o'clock news or any particular newscast on any channel has a finite time, whereas the internet has no time.
Right.
So it's kind of what I've been doing my whole career, and part of my job is to identify how do we evolve.
I feel like, how old are you?
45.
45, so I'm 51. I feel like the first 50 years of my life, I've looked at TV as a place to watch television shows. At 50, I now feel like it's an advertising show where they put in television. Isn't that weird? Am I becoming cynical?
I think if you're used to a DVR or something where you skip commercials and then you suddenly watch them without skipping them, that can occasionally seem like a long time, especially with the, not necessarily the local shows that we produce, but if you're watching, I don't watch a ton of what I would call traditional TV. A lot of it's on demand for me.
Yep.
So I've managed to, and that's kind of part of my role too, is how do you satisfy people who feel this way, and how do you give that on demand experience and that proximity to the news or whatever programming you're looking for in a way that everyone's consuming it, not like you were saying with the podcast, where you want to see it.
Well, and it also seems like, now they're doing this smart resume. Because I'm like you. I do a lot of DVR. I love that thing. It's really the reason I keep Comcast, because I wonder where else I can get a DVR that good. They're good. But now, like if you like football, now if you tape football, there's a thing called Smart Resume, and you just double click it or give it a triple, fast forward, and it zips through and it stops right at the programming. It's like, aren't we supposed to, don't they want us to watch the commercials? They're like almost helping us not watch commercials.
No doubt.
What's behind that?
Well, have you seen, there's a probably another example that I'm more familiar with is the Major League Baseball's app. Have you ever used that?
No.
So Major League Baseball has a subscription base, which is, I guess, the way you do get around that is if you have someone pay for an ad-free model, that's one way to do it.
Yep.
So if you have MLB and you have their app, they not only have the ability to watch it, it's a pretty cool app. You can see in-market and out-of-market games, plus the audio of whichever announcer you want. So if you like the Pirates and the Pittsburgh Pirates are playing out of market, you can still hear the local announcers play-by-play. But they have a thing where I assume they have someone watch the game and click a button whenever the play starts or stops. And you can watch a abridged version of the game where it's only play action.
Wow.
Which is almost vertigo-inducing because there's no, it's nonstop.
Just
one pitch after the other, and you're just watching action. But it's extremely, it's a sign of if you're a young person and that's all you're used to, life moves pretty fast.
So is it a replay of the game? Because you can't do that, obviously, live.
You can see it live, but then if you're like me, I'd rather watch highlights.
Right.
You can see it shifted.
Well, and what I like actually like is YouTube, because what YouTube has done is they've figured out how to do quick commercials. Mm-hmm. They get the commercial out. They're not doing it in over, you know, it's probably 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. 10, 15 seconds. I'm sure, because YouTube obviously used to allow you to skip the commercial. You go a couple seconds and then they would skip it. And I'm like, I just think, well, why not make a commercial that's fast, that tells you what they're selling, that happens before you can skip it?
Right.
And now they don't allow you, because they've gotten smart or they figured it. I don't know what they've done, but now you can't skip it. They make you watch the commercial, but it's quick. I'm like, well, that wasn't so bad. I mean, these long commercials that, you know, that just like, oh my God, those are the ones that seem to drive you crazy.
Yeah, the YouTube commercials back in the day, you know, they had a thing called TrueView. So as an advertiser, you only paid when someone didn't skip. Mm-hmm. And that's where the digital side of things has become very competitive. So if you have an advertising model where you're Google and you say, hey, look, we're only going to charge you if your viewer saw the entire commercial, that's why it's called this TrueView. That was very enticing because you can target so well. So if you're watching the same YouTube video as me, you may see a different ad than I would, even though it's the same show because it's dynamically inserted. And then not only that, you would only pay for the people that completed the views. That's very compelling.
That's probably for more of a person that, like I have YouTube in the salon here. I can just play music videos or music stuff and just let it go. And ads play, and it plays like a regular TV would play. Mm-hmm. When I'm sitting at home, you know, in front of the computer watching it, I'm like skipping stuff. So, I mean, when I'm attending to it, I'm skipping stuff. But when I, like, just stream it and let it roll, you know, the ads play through. So that's probably, I guess they see all that stuff. They got it all figured out.
Do you have Apple TV or Roku or one of those boxes for your TV?
I got everything. I got it all.
I've become addicted, I think, to YouTube more than any other. I used to be Netflix binge watcher, mm-hmm. and Hulu. And I have two children, so my time is, I'm in that phase of life where I don't have a ton of me time.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a snippet here or a snippet there. And so if I have 15 minutes before bed to unwind, I don't have time for a full show. But YouTube's algorithm has figured me out to the point that it's...
scary.
It's embarrassing. It's actually wonderful, but it's addicting because everything I like now that they offer... Even though it's a wide variety of topics all over the place, it looks a little schizophrenic, but it just happens to be everything that I've shown an interest in.
What is your favorite? What's your analytics look like for a guy like you? What is your what pops up? What's your first choice
for analytics?
Well, on YouTube, like whatever they do, whatever they figured out.
Like
when I turn my YouTube on, the first thing that usually pops up is a Joe Rogan podcast because
mm-hmm.
I watch them all. The second thing would be a guy by the name of Etho, who is a Minecraft gamer. I love watching Minecraft. I love watching one guy, Etho. I love Minecraft, and I watch him play it. So it's got me figured out. What's your first recommended suggestion?
So I usually get... No, they're all good. I get Joe Rogan clips, just like you.
Okay.
I'll get pop culture a little bit, like the Joker movie, like behind the scenes. I like a lot of interviews with actors or directors even. So
yeah.
YouTube has figured out that I like directing. So it may have a video of like how to light a bar scene.
Okay.
And I'm like, oh, I'd be interested to see like how do you light an intimate bar scene? Which is pretty nerdy, but I would watch that.
I love that stuff.
And then the next one may be, you know, how to cook a steak.
Mm.
Or some kind of food, like, or five ways to make a, like, have you ever seen I don't know if it's Epicurious or one of those shows that it's like five levels of omelets where they'll have one guy who's like me, who's horrible, and then it'll go all the way up to the level five where the fifth
Are you
level
sure you're omelet. Only watching for 15 minutes? Because this sounds deep.
I think they steal more time than I'd like to admit, but it's in 3-minute chunks.
First question, did you see The Joker?
I did, just two nights ago.
What'd you think?
I loved it.
Dude, was that not an amazing movie or what?
It was.
I watched that movie, and I caught a bunch of grief for it. And weird, a few of my friends were like, I'm not even really going to go into what they said, but they said it was just, you know, not great. And I'm like, Joaquin Phoenix, just by himself, is a reason to go see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to spend a lot of time delving deep into the backstory of this movie, you need to get something to do. Because, and everyone said it was about promoting violence and all this stuff. The thing I left when I left the theater was, how mental health, helping people with mental health has really dropped through the grades, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that, and I didn't even really think about that, but if that's what I was going to find out, or if I was going to be picky about something, maybe that. The violence, I thought it was an amazing movie. Joaquin Phoenix, is he not awesome or what?
Yeah, I watch movies more on the script writing and the production and the directing. And some people look at a movie as the story. Like, did I like the story or did I like the message? Right. I look at it more as, did they do a good job with their task at hand? Or you know? So I thought Joaquin Phoenix was really creative, and I thought he was a great actor. And I think for a guy like me who doesn't see a lot of shows in the theater, mm-hmm. like I said, with my kids and being busy, that was one where you say, you know what, I think I should take the time to see this on the big screen.
Yep.
It's also more of an art house movie than it was a thriller or an action movie.
It was beautiful.
The pace merited a big screen.
Yep.
But thanks to YouTube, I had already seen a lot of the director walking through how the shots were staged and you know how he framed them up. So when I see a movie, I'm not really looking at it the way that a literal person would say. Like, I'm not looking at the message or the violence. I'm right. looking at it more as an object someone crafted. I thought it was a really good good piece of movie. Yeah,
yeah. That's how I do it. And I don't get into it. Like, I didn't watch a lot of videos prior. I know that Joaquin Phoenix had a cleft lip.
Mm-hmm.
And he had it sewn together when he was a little kid. And I would think as a little kid, I would be like, well, I'm never going to be an actor because I have a cleft lip scar. Mm-hmm. And that guy, I mean, from what was the Gladiator?
Yeah, he was a bad
Walk
guy.
The Line. You saw Walk the
I
Line,
did.
Right?
He was phenomenal.
He sang all that. Did you know that? He sang all that music?
I'd forgotten.
I mean, he's just, you know, when he was shooting up that long set of stairs and he was dancing on the stairs, I was like, God, I wish I had a little mental health problem. Well, and that's not making fun of mental health, but that's a guy being a great actor.
Well, that was one of the scenes that they broke down where he shot it at, I think, 24 frames per second is the standard. Mm-hmm. And then he upped it up to a slow-mo almost sequence where it created more grace. Because mm-hmm. if you're seeing it at normal frame, the dance was more jagged and human.
Yeah.
But when you slow something down, it suddenly all the dotted lines are now connected because it's slow motion and it's more graceful. So that scene alone was something that I had seen a YouTube video about.
Well, and you know, 99.9% of that movie, he was not the Joker.
Right.
It was just the last, and if somebody's listening and we're spoiling it, sorry. But it was just the last few minutes that he was really the Joker. Up until that, he was just a guy, right?
Did you know that Robert De Niro was in a movie where he was a fan of a talk show host?
Yes.
And got himself on a show?
The baseball guy.
Yeah, it was, I forget the name of I'm sorry, I draw a blank.
Well, but wasn't he a baseball fan? Wasn't that the one where he was a fan of the baseball player and he would call into the talk radio and then he ended up, like, stabbing the guy?
Maybe.
Yeah. That was a good movie. He was crazy.
But there were a lot of tie-ins of these older, even Taxi Driver had some shout-outs in The Joker.
Well, I love that movie, and I actually took my 14-year-old. I actually have kids, too, and I've, you know, people are like, oh. It's like, my son didn't even care. He thought it was amazing. We thought it was funny.
I think 14 with dad, that's totally doable.
Yeah.
Depending on the context and if whether he can understand that it's acting.
Well, he knows it's a movie. You know, I think, I you know, it's funny as a parent, we won't go too deep into this, but as a parent, you know, we try to, oh, we don't want to let our kids do too much or get them in a position where they're going to be, you know, bad kids for playing too many Minecraft videos or whatever. But I remember as a kid, we were on the loose. I mean, it was a free-for-all. We were playing video games. We were having tons of fun. Pyrotechnics with WD-40. You know, don't ever try that at home, kids. But, you know, we tried everything, and we were fine.
Right.
Never raising kids. It's like, it's never easy, I suppose. How many? What do you say? You have two kids?
Two daughters. And one thing that seems to work for me is, again, keeping our YouTube theme, is anytime we see something. Because sometimes it's by accident. You know, it's not always by design. You go in knowing a movie may be scary, but maybe something happens where you did not remember because you saw it as an adult and you weren't remembering your kid's view, and then you take your 9-year-old and you realize, oh, boy, I got in the deep end of the pool by accident.
Uh-huh.
What we'll do is we'll watch the same actor in behind-the-scenes videos on YouTube where you see, like, hey, this is the actress who's in Descendants, or this is a person that was a Disney star.
That's a good idea.
And it demystifies it and puts it back in perspective that this is an actor and that's not really who they are. And they really didn't get hurt in that movie or whatever, but that's another, I think, upside to YouTube, is to be able to deconstruct.
Well, I've only made one real big mistake, and I took both my boys, and this was a few years ago. My one son, Sam, who's 8 now, was probably 5. We went and saw Suicide Squad.
Which I have not seen, so you have to tell me about that.
Nah, it was a terrible movie. It was an awful movie, but it was very violent. And I remember parents were looking at me with my kids. And we stuck it out. I went to one movie called Truth or Dare. I took Sam, my youngest one, Sam, to that because he wanted to go to a movie. And I'm like, all right, let's go. We looked at the thing and there wasn't a lot. I said, well, we'll try Truth or Dare, whatever. We walked out. And they actually gave me my money back because that was bad. It was too...
Was that rated PG-13?
Yes.
Because that's the challenge with PG-13. It could be anything.
Yeah.
Because it could be sexuality, it could be cursing and violence, and if you're not prepared for what that 13 means, it can catch you off guard.
I agree. And we walked out, and I told him, my mistake, my bad. Can we have our money back? And she goes, absolutely. He actually gave us more tickets, so we went back, I think, and saw Avengers, which is a lot less violent, right?
I've not seen Avengers. I have to confess, I've been pretty bad at it. I'm a full-time taxi driver and for my kids and the YouTube stuff. But what I have you ever used Common Sense Media?
No, I've used Common Sense Tom.
Well, Common Sense Media is a pretty good website that has parent and kid reviews of every show known to man.
Okay, no, that's... I didn't mean to make a joke of that.
No.
Well, that's a good idea.
I go into anything that says common sense skeptical, because if you declare it's common sense, it's usually a red flag.
Right.
This website is pretty good barometer, where you see a lot of different reviews, and it's big enough now that you can get a cross section. So if there's someone who's a little bit of a sensitive person who didn't like a movie, it'll be contrasted by someone who's a little tougher, and you kind of look at the overall theme,
right,
or the trend, and then they have parents rate it of what the appropriate age is,
yeah,
and then the kids rate it.
Oh,
so you could say it could be something like Suicide Squad, and you could have parents say it's good for 14-year-olds, but the kids may say it's actually 16. And sometimes the kids are more conservative than the parents. So
let's see how bad I screwed up. Common Sense, what's it called?
CommonSenseMedia.org.
Since media, see how bad I screwed up. .org search. So I didn't really have you on to talk about movies all day. I wanted to, I love to hear the story. We exist and we know where we are, and I love to try to bridge the two.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's a small business, I love having people that are opening small businesses, because I always say there's a guy sitting at home going, oh, I just want to open a small business. I just want to, but I'm so scared. I had a conversation with a client the other day. They own a business, but there's big changes going on in the business, and they're really going to have to be a lot more committed, a lot more responsible for their business. And she had a ton of questions for me. A guy who has a small business, I could answer a few, but I'm still that guy sitting on the couch. I did it, and I give a lot of the credit to me having this business to Matt Haley. He was a good friend of mine. And he said, either open up the salon or shut the F up. And I was like, okay, let's open it. And he put me in touch with the right people, allowed me to open this business. But I'm still that scared guy. I love that story because, there's a lot of other scared guys or gals that are wanting to do it. And the conversation I had with the lady the other day, I was able to help her. But that's a lot of the time. But you're not opening a small business. You're running a big business.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to maybe you could just share about what a day is like for you. What is how do you stay in the present? How do you still keep part of the future? Because sometimes the future can be big, and it's a lot to carry on our shoulders. It's like, oh my God, I know I'm safe right here. So what's a day, if you don't mind sharing a little bit of that, what's a day like for a media director, digital media director? How do you think about where you're headed, about staying current with what's going on today?
Yeah, well, I'm lucky because my last job prepared me for having one foot in the present and one foot in the future. And so I have to give credit to that for sanity, because at a retailer, you're in three seasons at once.
Mm.
So for, you're currently, let's say you're in fall, but you're planning, ready to launch holiday.
Right.
So every retailer in America right now has got their up to their eyeballs in holiday planning. And then you're probably doing a photo shoot for the spring. And you're hindsighting back to school.
And that's changed.
But that's...
I don't mean to cut you off, but even, we weren't seeing Christmas stuff this time of year earlier and earlier. It's still even evolving, right?
And I should be careful. I don't mean like Cracker Barrel, who puts their Christmas stuff out in July. I just mean planning. So if you're at a retailer, your store physically looks fall, let's say.
Right.
But your brain in the office is Christmas because you're ready. You're finishing up the touches and ready to launch, almost like in a theatrical debut. You're ready before the audience is, you know. Right. And then you also have to be getting ready even one step further by doing the photo shoot, let's say, for spring now.
Right.
So at the same time, you're hindsighting and doing all the analytics of how did back to school go. You're currently looking at how fall is going. You're about to launch and you've totally planned holiday. And you're doing a photo shoot physically now in some area that looks like spring because you've got to get all your assets together for that campaign.
Right.
So when I was at American Eagle, we did four seasons at once, like I just described, and we had four brands. That's 16 that you're doing at one time. So every time you walked in the office, you had to basically wear hats and be very comfortable flipping from which brand you're in to which season you're in and which whether you're having a finance discussion or a creative discussion, which are very obviously different teams.
Right.
And I think that's similar right now in media where we have very immediate things we're doing. So, you know, we purchased WRDE, and that's a very big project to bring the news local on Delmarva. It used to be produced and done down south, and now we have a local studio that's going to launch soon, and in November, hopefully. And as we plan for that, there's a lot of very specific things that I'm doing for making sure we can stream the show on Facebook or making sure that our apps are ready for WRDE. And all of our content is, like you said, with your podcast, is all the stuff showing up where it needs to be? Because we're a broadcaster. We have FTC and FCC licensing, where you know we have to have closed captioning, which you don't have to have probably. And so there are a lot of very tactical things we do.
Right.
But yet at the same time, there's conversions. So newspapers can shoot video, broadcasters can write articles. And thanks to blogs and WordPress and just everything coming together, it's really fun to think about what is the workflow of the future and what is a news, you know, who are you? I think everyone has to have that conversation is what are we and where are the edges and how do we excel and what we need to do to be a good business versus how do we evolve at the same time and try new things? Probably like any business, you know, if you think about, I know there's an acai bowl place in Ocean City, and they sell shaved ice because it's a great margin.
Right.
So sometimes you got to sell some other
stuff.
Like
the donut business.
Yeah.
Donuts and coffee used to be a huge, huge business because the margins were so, you know, it didn't take a lot of money to make a donut. But you could turn around and flip it for quite a bit. So
yep.
Shaved ice is probably going to be even better.
Yeah.
Electric, I guess you got to make the ice. But
you got to buy the machine.
Well, and I always, you know, we started doing this podcast. But then I'm like, there is no podcasting going on here in this area. I go, I'm going to start the new WBOC of podcasting. Because that's a great story, right? I mean, Tom Draper, God rest his soul,
mm-hmm.
You know, he started WBOC. I never met Tom Draper. I've been here for 25 years. I don't know how long WBOC has been around, but I know he started it. I'm right with that, right? I mean, he had an idea and he started it. And I'm sure there are people going like, all right. Tom, another Tom, but starting a WBOC. And it's like the same way with podcasting. People are like, whether they're interested or not, but you just keep working at it. You show up every day and you keep working at it, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, you've kind of made something.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't made WBOC, but we're starting to get people. I've had people calling me this all week, wanting to come on the podcast, sending me messages. It's starting to become, it's taking a little footprint.
Well, what I like about your podcast is that it's similar to Rogan on a local level, where you tune in. I think most people probably tune in to hear someone they're interested in learning about.
Right.
So, you know, I know Press Shell, and so
having, he was great.
Having him on, I listened to him, and I grew up eating turkey grinders at Louis, so I like to hear the guy from Louis.
Timmy.
Yeah, so, and I don't know him, and you're bringing a lot of people that I kind of grew up around. That's what's cool about the podcast and, in general, the internet. Is it allows you to connect with people that physically you may not be able to interact with or get to know, but it demystifies them and you get to know your community. So if I ever do see Tim from Louise or Preston, I can get a little more perspective and kind of a little background about how they think.
Well, and I can tell you that everybody that's been on the podcast, for the most part, has been a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the amazing things about living in this community. Me and you aren't friends. Carlos brought you on. But most people, and I feel I could be friends with you. Hopefully we will be friends from this point on.
We have 27 mutual friends on Facebook.
That's a lot.
I think that means we're friends.
Yeah, but when you kind of grow up in this area, and if you live in a pretty decent life, you're going to build up a group of friends, or at least a lot of acquaintances. Mm-hmm. And, when I had Preston on, he was great. I thought that podcast was pretty funny. In fact, if you listen to it, when he talks about the giant mug from Wawa, the giant tub mug, see, that cracked me up. I was like, this guy's just a regular guy, you know? I don't think we talked about houses at all.
No.
And when I approached him about coming on the podcast, he was like, well, if you want to talk about houses, you probably need to talk to Chris. If you want to talk about land development, I'd love to come on. I go, I don't really know anything about land, but I'd like to talk about maybe coffee or Firefly. He's like, yeah, we could do that. And it was great. And I think that that's an exact example of what we're trying to do here is the bridge. You know, we know, you know, the Shell brothers are now, they just get blamed for everything, all the problems that we have with houses. Which really annoys me because you couldn't find a better group of people doing a better job than those guys do. And then they catch a lot of flack, usually by all the people that moved here. You know, it's funny. But I love the podcast. I do love that because it is learning about our local people. And that was really the point of it is, you know, we know you're here and we know what you have and what got you here, especially to that guy that's sitting at home maybe thinking about opening a builder or opening a pizza place.
Well, am I allowed to ask you questions?
Absolutely.
I'd like to build the bridge to connect across, you know, some of our mutual friends and your transition here. You're from New Mexico.
I am from Albuquerque.
And how did you get over here?
Well, my dad, that's a fantastic question. So my dad grew up in Selbyville. My dad's the first person to go to the Air Force Academy from Delaware. First graduating class of 59, first person to go to the Air Force Academy from Delaware. He became head of IFN in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So we were stationed at Kirtland Air Force Base. We were there for 15 years. And then my dad took a job in San Diego, Sereno Valley, working for a company called Logicon. And so I followed him out there. And my life kind of got a little rough out there. It was a lot of fun out in San Diego. I don't know if you've ever been. But it usually takes you, chews you up, and spits you out. And that's kind of, I was in my early 20s and trying to figure out what I was going to do. And my dad was working for Logicon. And that's kind of when the Defense Department and a lot of changes were going on. And Clinton was president, a lot of cuts. And he just is like, you know, I'm just retiring. He'd retired from the Air Force, gone to work for Logicon. And he said, you know what, we're moving to Rehoboth. You want to go with us? You can. If you want to stay here, you're on your own. Good luck. I said, I may not be the smartest guy, but I know I'm smart enough that I need to go with you. So we came back here, and I bounced around here a little bit and then finally got sober. I was struggling with alcohol and some other bad behavior and finally got sober in 97, and my life just took off, and this is where it happened to take off yet in Rehoboth, and was over in Easton. And I actually have a degree in turf management. I was actually in the golf course industry for a long time. I was an assistant superintendent at over at Baywood. And then I took a job over in Eastern Maryland. And I was just tired of babysitting grass because that's what we do here in the Mid-Atlantic. And I came back here and I was friends with Drexel. And I said, it was like that Seinfeld episode, you know, where he's, you know, did you ever watch Seinfeld?
Some, but I'm not a power fan. I'm reluctant to jump in the deep end of
Well, did you ever Seinfeld see where quotes? He gave his boss a Mickey?
I haven't seen that one.
George slipped his boss a Mickey and got fired.
Okay.
And so at the end of the episode is Jerry.
Is the guy from the Yankees, George's boss? Or?
No, it was prior to the Yankees.
Gotcha.
But they're sitting on the floor and George is like, I like animals. Maybe I could be a vet. And he goes, I think that requires education, George. That's kind of where I was at. And Drexel's like, you should be a hairdresser. So I reached out to Kevin and Jason over at John Lorraine and hung out with those guys for a day and just really liked what they were doing and went to school for it and became a hairdresser. And worked in some salons, and then eventually Preston. And that was really a big reason I had him on, is I just wanted to say thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, he took a chance on me. I didn't have anything to offer. I didn't really have a big history of anything. And he said, you know what? And I remember Matt goes, now when you go see Preston, don't say a lot. He's a very smart guy. Just let him talk. I said, you got it. And I did. And he took a chance on me. And that was really the big reason I wanted to have him on. And I was able to say thank you. So that was cool.
So how do you know Matt Haley? Because that's something where I grew up here, and then I left, and then I came back. But while I was gone, there was this whole era, which I'll call it, that he was part of.
That era. Haley era?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sad that I missed it, because he's an amazing, you know, I've heard a statement that says your life is your message, which mm-hmm. I think is a pretty powerful thing. And the way people talk about Matt Haley is universal. And he seems to have touched more lives than most folks I've ever heard of in this area.
Yeah.
Would you mind telling a guy like me who missed that whole chapter?
The Matt Haley.
Yeah,
era.
How did you meet him and what that's about?
I know him because we were sober. Matt was sober. I know he wouldn't care if I shared that. Most people knew that. And a lot of people that dealt with Matt were either in business or struggling with some sort of sobriety. And so that's how I met Matt. I remember it was like 1998. We went down to Dewey Beach. It was, and if the dates are wrong or the, you know, if anything is wrong, whatever. But I remember like 98. And I was hanging out with my buddy Rick. He said, let's go see my buddy Matt. He's got a place down in Dewey. Matt at the time had a little apartment or something down in Dewey Beach. And I walked in and he came over to me. And the great thing about Matt Haley was always like, when you had a relationship with Matt Haley, you felt like you were his only friend. He would sit down. He would take the time. You're like, I think I'm this guy's only friend. That's just how he made you feel. And I remember meeting him in Dewey Beach, and he's like, you know, stop by my place. And he was just a cool guy. And we would be friends for a while. And then at some point, probably, it was probably 17 years, 16 years now, I started having a one-on-one daily conversation with him as far as just trying to figure out where I was headed. I was not struggling with sobriety, but struggling with understanding why I wanted to be sober. You know, I had to start learning about loving sobriety more than I was in fear of drinking. And I spent a lot of time in sobriety with the fear of drinking and not as much in love with sobriety. And I remember I said, you know, I could use your help. And he says, call me every day. And I go, and I thought to myself, I go, this guy knows I have something important to say. He clearly wants me to call him every day. That's the self life I lived. And I remember I called him the first day and he didn't answer. I was like, huh. And I called him the second day and he didn't answer. I was like, geez, what's going on? The third day I called him, he didn't answer. I'm like, well, this guy's something seriously. Maybe his phone's broken. So I called him the fourth day and he answered. Hey, man. Hey, what's going on? He's all, thanks for calling. Call me tomorrow. Bye. And that was that would be a perfect lesson. I used to call it my 7-number prayer every day. I called him every day. We talked every single day, but I would learn. That would be like one of those things. He wouldn't answer, and all of a sudden, this self-centered junk would start pouring out. Like, what's, you know? Doesn't he know I'm calling? It was a lot of lessons that I would learn about myself on little things that he would do like that. You know, call me every day, and then not answer. And then let me just run loose in my mind with why. And I started realizing, you know, I'm a self-centered guy. I always say I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. That's my problem. And Matt would kind of teach me about that kind of stuff without sitting me down and going, listen, you're a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. He was great about that. Or I remember he would say, it's a little crass, but he would say, you know, as long as you're not smoking crack and paying for hookers, it should all work out. And for a guy like me, that I needed it that simple. You know, but he could tell me stuff like that, and he'd be like, yeah, you're right. And or the other thing he would say is, check your mailbox, take out the mail, and if there's a bill, pay it right away and put it back in the mailbox. Because that $25 bill that you owe in a week unpaid becomes $50. In 2 weeks, it becomes $75. And in 3 weeks, that's a $100 bill. It's taking the weight of a $100 bill in my mind and the anxiety, when it's still just $25, but the procrastinating, putting it off, creates more value to it, and it makes it worse for you. Pay it right away. Until you start understanding what that kind of stuff does to you, just take care of it right away. So that was just the kind of stuff. And he just became, he is actually my son Sam's godfather. He was just a huge, it's weird now that he's gone because now I have to reflect on him. At the time when he was alive, you know, I reflected with him. But I can tell you, he won the James Beard Award. And he called me the day they were going up to get the award. He said, can you swing by? I was like, sure. I go upstairs, and he's looking at ties. And I'm like, yeah. He said, oh, what do you think of this one? I go, looks good. And if you knew Matt, he wore a white shirt and blue jeans every day. So he's like, what do you think of this tie? I go, it looks good, too. So he picked out a couple ties. And he goes, let's go for a walk. And I was like, all right, we've never gone for a walk. So we're walking around his neighborhood, and he says, there's just days I feel like they're going to figure out I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm like, you're going to win to pick up the James Beard Award. I mean, you know what you're doing. But it's just, it's he went through it. I still go through it. We still just wonder, are they going to figure out I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, mm-hmm. Or heck, what the heck I'm doing, sorry. He was just a normal guy that was having his moment, and he deserved it because... and then after he went away, after he passed away, I would meet all these people that would be like, and I would share the same story. He just made you feel like you were his only friend. And I had a guy who says, I think I'm going to pick up where Matt left off. And I go, you can't. He spent too much, that time where you're sitting at home watching YouTube or where I'm at home helping or watching YouTube, he's over at, down in Georgetown helping with Pathways to Success. He's giving out awards. He's sitting with students. He's meeting with future chefs that are in prison. He's, helped building kitchens in the jails. I mean, he did everything. And you can't compare. And that's kind of why I started the Real Social Podcast. It was really one small business helping another. And that was Matt helped me. Preston helped me. And if I can at least shine a little light on people that are doing that kind of stuff, at least I try.
Well, one thing I liked about your podcast is it reflects the idea of a connection and not a lack of an agenda. So when I was listening, because when I was coming on, when you asked me to come on, my first thought was, okay, well, we're going to talk shop a lot, and I got to have, what's the future of marketing? And that's kind of what I like to do, so I would have been happy to do it. But on the other hand, I can be a little high strung because I'm so prone to talk about work.
Right.
Or not even work, but just the future. I love thinking about, where's things going and what's the next thing? And I like to think a lot. So that doesn't mean I relax a lot when it comes to just chit chat.
Right.
So the more I listened to your podcast, the more I thought, what's cool about Tom's interview style and what's also cool about the guests is everyone's willing to, heaven forbid, waste an hour.
Exactly.
Because it's not about what is the output of this? What is our goal? And I think that's something that when you describe Matt Haley or just in general Delmarva, the thing that means the most to me about Delmarva is connecting with people.
Yeah.
And I think in my past life of my different career path, you didn't see people. Because in larger, although I really am glad I left town and I have a lot of experiences I wouldn't trade, one vantage point is that when you live in large cities and you work at corporations, everybody goes home to a neighborhood where the houses are the same price and everyone's going to the same job. It's a little bit like Kamazots and Wrinkle in Time. And you're not connecting with your neighbor.
Right.
And my favorite part of going to Milford High School and still favorite part of Delmarva is everybody's in a big pile. So across the board of every spectrum of everything you would want to put on a spectrum, whether it's in education, background, income, everything, it's all in a big pile. And at the end of the day, we all talk to each other. And that's what I've enjoyed about your podcast, is that just getting that human feel. There was a guy on, I forget his name, but he talked about his brother's suicide.
Mm.
That was a good episode.
Yeah.
And, I don't know him, and I don't know what he looks like, but, you have a preconceived notion, and this is something I think Delmarva does a very good job at teaching people when they grow up here. Is you can see a person that looks tough as nails.
Right.
And they can be very sincere.
Yeah.
And I think that sincerity is a rare commodity. And what you just described with Matt Haley, or whatever your goals are with the podcast of helping businesses or just having a conversation, the thread that you're weaving is this concept of being sincere.
Well, and I think the podcast started off as that, and it's still that. But, you know, at some point, then you're like, you want to start doing, you know, if maybe not necessarily you, because you're established in what you do, but like, you know, the guy that the guitar teacher from Dover, you know, I want to create some value. I want to make it worth his while. You know, if I can help his business at the same time, you know, and in the beginning it was like people come in, we sit down, we BS for an hour, and then we go, and it's cool. But then it's, you know, and then I brought it in corporate, and corporate's like, you know, how are these people getting some value out of this podcast? I'm like, oh, brother, here we go. And that's when it became, you know, corporatized. And so we have to find out how can we help people also. You know, it is, if people do start listening, how can we start helping them and as far as promoting them and stuff like that? So what started off as one thing is starting to evolve into another. And I love just chatting with people, but at some point we have to become of value to them too. Some more than others. And I think that's where the challenge is, because, you know, we don't want to waste people's time, like you just said. We don't want to just waste an hour.
I think if you're learning, I mean, you have a great audience. I forget the stats, but Carlos was telling me you're was it like?
We're almost at 5,000.
Yeah, I mean, that's an audience. I mean, you got to start by planting the seed and having all these guests, and then you build that value through the audience, and that seems what you're achieving is it's pretty fantastic.
Well, and we're actually building a podcast network, the future WBOC of podcasting, and we are, and I don't know how to do that. I cut hair. So, but we're trying. So now we have actually five people podcasting for us. We have the Film Effect. We have Anonymous and Honest Look at Recovery. Gretchen Hansen doing food therapy. Tiffany and I doing a podcast called Full Send, where we review coffee and just kind of shoot the crap and have fun. Not a lot of requirements for that one. And then Corporate and I do Broken Stoked. I'm broke, he's stoked.
So Carlos is corporate?
He's corporate.
Gotcha.
He's the corporate guy.
Does he know he's corporate?
Oh yeah. He wakes up in the morning, looks at himself and says, I'm corporate.
Because he laughs a lot. I've listened to you and Carlos, and I don't know him. So while I did get introduced, I met him tangentially through Rob Rector.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not close to him, and I've met him maybe twice, but we get along, and he's a nice guy, and I knew he worked at GoPro, which I guess makes him corporate in a way.
Well, he can write up a form, you know, a contract. And as far as that goes, if you can write up a contract, that makes you corporate. That's just, you know, that's kind of, it's our two lives, you know. He's more contract, I'm more not contract. So it's good to kind of have the two kind of come together.
Well, speaking of corporate and Carlos, I am due to try the float tank.
Ooh.
Have you done it?
I can give you a float. Do you have any floats?
I've never floated.
I'll give you a float.
So tell
me. He gave me three floats, and I said, can I give them away? He goes, yeah, you can give them away.
Well, yeah, I want to support the business. I can buy a float, too, but I think that is something that fascinates me.
Dude, floating is sweet. It is nice. I mean, you're 10 inches of, I think, 1,600 pounds of dissolved Epsom salts, and it's amazing. My problem is I just don't have an hour. That's my only thing. You just got to find the time.
You should float while you podcast.
You can't do that because that you wouldn't. You'd be focused, and your mind wouldn't be able to let go. And then he's like, "Well, you can't drink coffee before you podcast or float either." And I was like, "Well, I drink coffee right away in the day, so." But I got to float for you. You want to go over there?
I would love to float.
Yep. And Carlos would love to have you over there.
It'd be great to see him. I also want to try it to fast. I was hearing about you fasting, and I know we're probably running out of time, but that is something that I have esteemed to fast as much as you do. I probably make it 12 to 13 hours, but I can't do
it's habit.
The amount you get.
I only do, I just don't eat, I don't eat breakfast and I don't eat lunch. I just have, I do a program called Just Supper, Back to Reality. And it's just eating like we would have 300 or 400 years ago.
So if you need to work out, I don't know your workout regimen, does that sustain?
Yep.
Would you work out fasted is what they would say?
Yep. I just eat at supper.
And then you just eat to recover.
I don't even need to, I don't work out that much. I run or I ride my bike. I'm 51. And I have an amazing wife and beautiful kids, and I don't need any more amazingness, so I don't work on my muscles too much. I mean, I push-ups and stuff. I work out. You know what? When I work out, it's funny. I do my 8-year-old workout. So we do push-ups, set-ups, stretchy things, you know, because they want to go to the gym. So I take them to Rise. And I do a workout that's suitable for them. Push-ups, jumping jacks, stretchy things. But I eat just supper. You know, I think people think that, you know, I don't think that when you eat supper, I don't really think we're even pulling that energy until the next day. So, you know, it's just all habit, you know. It's all a relationship with breakfast, a relationship with lunch. Try it for 1 week. You can go back to eating how you used to, but you will definitely end up that week with your eyes wide open. If you're only eating one meal, you start paying attention to what you're eating. You start,
right?
You're not eating snack bars. You're not counting numbers anymore. It's like, give me a nice piece of meat, some steamed vegetables, a potato, real butter, real sour cream. If it's the only one meal you're getting, you know, this fat-free stuff. If it says fat-free, that means fuel-free to me, because fat's good.
Mm-hmm.
Fat, I love fat. You should eat fat. But that's a whole nother podcast.
No doubt.
Try it though. Try it for 1 week. Come back on. Do the Just Supper program.
I will. I'll put it on. I think I do like to run, so I run a lot. And I would have to just do the math and see how I felt when I would run.
Well, that's where I learned about this, because I would run in the mornings, and then if I didn't eat a good dinner, I wouldn't have a great run the next day. If I had a good, you know, protein, a lot of sustainable stuff that I ate, I would have a good run. But I also learned that when I don't have a good run, if I wait just a couple minutes, I'm back. My food starts finding, you know, my love handles,
right,
my stomach. So, you know, breakfast is a relationship. Lunch is a relationship. And especially I love it when you ask people or tell people they can't have breakfast or lunch and all the reasons that they tell me why they should. It's a relationship. When I broke up with breakfast, it was sad. I love blueberries and oatmeal and honey.
I had blueberries, oatmeal, and honey for breakfast, I have to confess.
Today?
Literally.
Exactly. See, it's the same shit, same stuff. I love it, and the special blueberries and the special oatmeal. Forget it. Did you have dinner?
I did.
Gluttonous.
I had yeah.
It's a gluttonous lifestyle, buddy.
I had ice cream, too.
Okay, so I did, too. I love ice cream. And like I said, when you only have dinner, it's really, I mean, it all ends up being about 1,800 calories by the end of the day. So... And it's really, you know, Laird Hamilton said, and if you watch Joe Rogan, you probably saw him on there. He goes, at some point, we just have to start using our own brain and saying, is this working for me?
Right.
Is this not working for me? And that's kind of what...
Well, you know what's terrifying, especially if you're talking about your alcohol, you're leaving alcohol behind and things. When you start to think of your body, I think as I've gotten older, you think about your body as being, not to be too dramatic about it, but your mouth is literally a hole.
That's right.
And you are putting things in your body.
That's right.
Your body's not made of
steel. And it's a vehicle.
It's not made of steel. It doesn't have, you know, it's not a machine. It is a machine, but it's a biological machine.
Right.
What on earth are you sticking in there that you're expecting your body to handle?
Well, when you only start eating supper, you start paying attention to that. All of a sudden, you buy organic. You know, all of a sudden, I'm peeling apples. You know, I don't, you know, chemicals, a lot of chemicals can be in apples. But now I buy organic apples. It's an eye opener,
mm-hmm.
And it's been a great. I made 3 big changes this year. One is I only eat supper. 2 is I only drink black coffee, and 3 is I'm in bed at 10 o'clock snuggling my wife, no TV, at 10, and then the weekends is TV party night. But that's what I do, and all 3 of those changes have been a big changer in my life. The dinner for one. The coffee, I was drinking a lot of cream and sugar. A lot of sugar I was taking up in the coffee. And now I really enjoy black coffee. I mean, it's a whole new world. Like, it'd be like for someone that likes wine, black coffee's been...
I'm black coffee, too. My only main vice now is the ice cream. But when I was 27...
Dude, you look great.
When I was 27, I weighed 265.
Ooh.
And now I weigh about 200. And I lost the weight by getting rid of sugar in my coffee. That's kind of...
Isn't that funny?
It's crazy. And Coke.
Dude, you know, sugar and coffee is like this podcast. Little by little, it's going to blow up. Ha! Just like he did on sugar. Ethan, we got to shut it down, bro.
It's great talking to you and great meeting you.
We did an hour. How was it?
It's awesome.
I appreciate you coming. I always say to anybody that comes on this podcast, thank you, because I know you probably could have done something important for that hour, but you chose to hang out with me, and I said thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And hopefully you'll come back.
I'd love to.
Maybe you can come on the Full Send podcast where we do a coffee review.
I'm in.
And hang out with me and Tiff. Funny story about
two. Do you have to drink it all, or do you like swish it and spit it out like wine? Do you actually?
We only
drink
review
it?
One kind for okay. The day. We just make coffee and then
could like be dangerous. Last,
yeah, but we did Sumatra the last, and then we did La Casa coffee. It was good, but I ordered two. I bought two bulk kinds of coffee at Fresh Market, and I forgot to label them, so I don't know what they are. So, all right, brother. I appreciate you coming on, and hopefully you'll come back.
Thanks, Dom.
Have a great day, bud.
You too.
All right, bye.